Voice of the Grateful Dead. You're listening to WBAI-FM New York City 99.5.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI. It's 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night. This is Emmanuel Goldstein, and what's the catch? This is the first time I've been here in a long time at this hour, and things are always going wrong, so I'm kind of suspicious. All right, so I'm here. It's the beginning of the show. We're not canceled. I'm not on a train someplace. This is actually going to happen. All right. Roll the theme. Good evening to everybody. The program is off the hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next hour. Isaac over there in the corner.
Yes.
How you doing?
Back on the other side here where it's a lot more calm.
Yeah. It's good seeing you over there.
Yes.
Where you belong.
Oh, okay.
Only kidding. Well, you know, I said goodbye to an old friend this week. Yeah. That's why I'm in kind of a somber mood because I'm going to miss this this entity. Talking about that brilliant light up in the sky, Mir. Space station that will come hurtling down to Earth on the 20th of the month. I saw it on Saturday night.
You did?
Yeah, it was right there in the evening, right before the actual darkness set in. about 6 o'clock or so. Thanks to various sites that map this kind of thing, I was able to actually see it go across the sky one last time. I don't think it's going to be visible again in this hemisphere, even when it comes down on the 20th. I think that's only going to be visible in places like New Zealand, where it might be very visible, depending on how close it gets to that country.
Staying inside visible.
If I was in New Zealand, I'd be pretty upset right now. All the spacecraft come hurtling down that area. It was an emotional event, actually. You'd think seeing a little spot of light going across the sky wouldn't have an effect on you, but you know it did, because I'd seen this this little speck a couple of times. The first time I was really kind of freaked out because I was looking in the sky and I knew it was an airplane. It was too bright and moved in kind of a weird way. If you ever seen a satellite, they just don't move the same way as airplanes. And I later looked it up, and sure enough, Mira just happened to come across at the very moment that I was looking up at the sky, and it was kind of cosmic. And there's other little lights up there, but it's just going to be kind of weird knowing that one's no longer there. You can see the International Space Station. That's it's not the same thing. It's a different. It's
well,
a different.
You're losing one, and you're getting a much brighter one.
How nice! How Cal? You know, everything works out in the end, right?
Well, yes,
Mr. Pollyanna over there. Thank you very much. But
I'm a glass half full kind of guy.
International Space Station will be one of the brightest objects in the sky. In fact, if you want to be up tonight, and if somehow the sky clears up, I think at 4:31. It will be appearing in the New York area tomorrow night at 5:03. And if you want to, if you really want to learn more about this, go to a site called www.heavens-above.com. You can map it no matter where you are in the world, which is kind of cool.
Those guys are very cool.
They are.
They were recently, a little while ago, maybe 5-6 weeks ago, everyone was up in arms about them because they also like to track some of the black satellites that go up.
Yeah, well,
been, keeping care of the lacrosse orbits.
Satellites,
like
whatever color they are, we don't care. Also, make sure tune into Robert Knight's program tomorrow night. He does an excellent job with tracking things like satellites and all kinds of other cosmic events that are going on, as well as earthly events. In fact, I really should say at this point that I was listening to his show last week. He does Earthwatch. It's been on for ages. Wednesday nights at midnight, and he was discussing the recent Pacifica National Board meeting, which took place a weekend ago, and some really, really good coverage, some eye-opening coverage, some interesting interviews. And unfortunately, in this day and age, it takes guts to actually come on the air and do that kind of thing. So I just want to salute that kind of spirit, because that's what makes BAI, that's what makes Pacifica what it is, or what it has been, what it will be again, whatever it is that you want to define it as. And there were a lot of people here. One thing I guess I came to realize looking at that little speck of light going across the sky, it soon will be no more, is that you have to take the time when you're here to acknowledge the good things. Not that it was particularly good seeing it up there, just kind of reassuring knowing something was there in the sky. But there are people here that I think really deserve recognition for the amazing work that they do. And I was just thinking about this over the last few hours, actually. How many people there are here at the station that do such good things. And it's what makes the place worth supporting, what makes the place worth coming to every week, what makes the place certainly worth listening to every week. I could go on for hours about all the different programs that are on this station that are just amazing, that just open up your eyes. Like, say, Bob Fass, for instance, who has been on this radio station for... I think as long as the station's been around, yeah. And he always does interesting interviews, eye-opening commentary. And you walk away, or stand up if you've been sitting down, thinking you've really gotten something out of it. And I think that really matters. The list goes on. I mean, Robert Knight, Bob Fass, Bill Weinberg, Mario Murillo, Errol Maitland, Ken Nash, all these people that are either here or not here. In fact, Ken Nash, interesting, I mentioned Ken Nash, he was on a couple of weeks ago, and this is the latest saga, latest chapter in the whole Pacifica BAI thing. I don't know if you guys have been following this this story, or if we've just been reading things on the internet. This is actually something that's going out throughout the whole world now. It's no longer a little internal squabble here. This is now on the floor of the Congress of the United States of America. Did you hear about this, Isaac?
No, sir.
Oh, well, maybe you ought to listen to this.
Speaker, tyrants in control of totalitarian countries like China, Serbia, and Iraq consider control of the airways an absolute necessity. They ruthlessly enforce censorship of a kind few of us can imagine in America. On last Monday, however, I had the weird and frightening experience of being gagged by a radio station manager in my own home city of New York. It started with a routine request that I call in for a phone interview on a show hosted on radio station WBAI by Ken Nash, which focuses on union and labor news and features. The name of the show, which commences at 2 p.m., was Building Bridges. As a ranking Democrat on the Workforce Protection Subcommittee, I welcome the chance to appear on shows related to working families or unions. It is important to note that radio station WBAI is a nonprofit station. It runs primarily on contributions solicited from a mass of diverse listeners. Since last December, the station has experienced considerable turmoil internally, and long-term producers and hosts have been fired or locked out of the station. Like many New Yorkers, I am concerned about the present and future of this vital outlet for free speech on the radio. Without knowing all of the specific tensions and confrontations within the station, I have indicated my interest in working toward the resolution of the problems hampering the continuation of the unique and robust programming of WBAI. It is important to note that I am presently seeking ways to get more avenues open for radio free speech in my city in general. Five low-power Haitian stations have been shut down. The survival of WBAI is vital for the entire movement seeking more access to the airwaves. The bully monopolies of commercial radio provide the continuing roadblocks to these stations. My knowledge of the reputation of certain recent appointments to the board of Pacifica Network, which is a parent nonprofit institution responsible for WBAI, leads me to conclude that there is a clear and immediate danger that attempts will be made to sell WBAI to a commercial owner. Such a sale would mean the loss of a vital voice for working families in New York City. My beliefs and point of view are considered heresy by station manager Utrice Lee. Without explanation or apology, she shut down the microphones and proclaimed that she had to intervene because it was her job to allow only the truth over the airwaves. The following is a summary of the statement I would have made had I not been censored and shut off. The situation at WBAI has implications far beyond this one station. Freedom of speech over the airwaves via radio, broadcast television, and cable television is presently quite limited for the majority of Americans, and they are not aware of this. We have a problem of great magnitude that is not being appropriately addressed. The WBAI arrangement and structure offered one model to be emulated. As a listener-supported station with a very diverse set of programs, procedures, and guests, WBAI represents the optimum use of radio and the services of ordinary people. When I attended the memorial service of the late Samori Marksman, who was a former WBAI station manager, last year in the Great Hall of St. John's Cathedral, I saw at that funeral a more diverse assembly than I have seen anywhere in New York City. Folks from all races, religions, income levels, and political persuasions were there. There were intellectual snobs who support programs broadcasting esoteric operas, mingling with radical grassroots political activists. Indeed, as a politician, one immediate reaction I experienced as I contemplated all of the diversity and the solidarity that was at that funeral, I felt that some of the powerful people in powerful places would see WBAI as a threat and seek to destroy it. WBAI represents radio freedom of speech that does not make profit for anyone. There are those who see profits being made via WBAI and other Pacifica stations. There are others in powerful places who feel that only commercial stations should exist, or if there are public stations, they should be indirectly controlled by corporate grants and benign corporate advertisements. Some of the persons who have recently been appointed to the Pacifica board represent such powerful commercial interests. In my opinion, WBAI is an endangered station as long as such business predators are on the Pacifica board. Persons far removed from the original ideals and philosophy of the founders of the Pacifica chain are not likely to promote the original intent of this very well-conceived system. A basic question which must be tested as soon as possible in the courts is who owns a nonprofit entity and who has a right to sell a nonprofit radio station? Does the original charter or licensing by the FCC permit any group of trustees or directors to treat Pacifica and WBAI as if they were commercial entities? While the Pacifica turmoil is raging, I strongly urge WBAI to seek to preserve its freedom by exploring the necessary steps to become independent of Pacifica. As a nonprofit entity, WBAI should use the university structure as a model. It should elect a board of trustees through a voting process, utilizing its contributors and supporters as the voters. The trustees should be responsible for basic business operations, while the producers and staff should be given a role similar to the faculty of a university. Basic freedom similar to academic freedom and tenure should be conferred upon the long-standing producers and long-term paid and unpaid staff participants. We want to preserve WBAI in New York City.
And those are words from Congressman Major Owens out of Brooklyn. Interesting how this is now on the floor of the House of Representatives. Just keeps getting bigger. This is no ordinary radio station, folks. This is something that people care about. And that's why I hope people of all ages, all walks of life, all geographical areas, I hope they all realize the importance of this place and why we need you. We need you to remain part of the dialogue, to remain part of the family. And don't let any of this fall by the wayside. You know, it's an issue that is not going to go away. It's something that we're not going to ignore. I've made that pledge many, many times. And I think it's going to get more and more interesting. We're going to learn more about how things actually work. And, you know, this ties into so much of what we've been saying over the years about the corruption of radio, how things become more and more commercialized. Well, it's hitting kind of close to home here, and the concerns people have are something that we should not be taking lightly. This radio station exists as a forum for many of us to speak out, and many listeners as well. And that's why we're here. Can't lose sight of that. Now, Representative Owens said some interesting things, too, about low-power FM. I don't know if you caught that. About Haitian radio stations in New York that are being shut down. And I imagine a lot of people don't even know about that. There are these low-power stations that have existed for years in various parts of New York, Brooklyn. And who's to say that those stations don't have the right to exist? That the only voice should go to the big corporations that run all the radio stations in town anyway. The 50,000-watt stations, they're the ones that have priority over the 10-watt stations serving a small community. It's basically, we're going into a period here which is kind of unprecedented, because I don't think the sides have ever been so established. You know, the individual versus the mighty corporation that just wants to make profits and doesn't really care about the community that much. If you listen to one radio station in New York, you can listen to one in Kentucky, and they sound exactly the same, and there's no real difference. Whereas you listen to any low-power station any place, and they all sound different. Yet somehow these 10-watt, 100-watt stations, they're considered a big threat, even if they're two frequencies over from a big 50,000-watt station. It's bizarre. The kinds of things that are happening right now are bizarre. But anyway, what we have here is we have a 50,000-watt non-commercial station, which is still the best station in town. And I intend to do everything I can to keep it that way. Isaac, how about you?
You don't want to know my comments on this.
All right. Now, that's somehow reassuring, actually.
Well, the one quick one I can give you is that I don't believe this is a 50,000-watt station.
Yes, but you also don't believe
we're
lots of things that are right in front
power.
Of you as well. All right, well, if we would at least admit that this is a station that is as powerful as any other station in the city.
Yes.
Okay.
It definitely puts out a heck of a signal.
Right. We're as powerful as K-Rock. We're as powerful as Hot 97.
Yes.
We're as powerful as...
Oh, we're right up there. And we're right in the middle of the band, too.
That's right.
That's somewhat unprecedented.
All right. More on Congress. Congress just keeps coming at us this week. This is the congressional show. now it's the turn of Representative Rick Boucher, Democrat from Virginia. I don't know if you read his comments in the last week or so. He's actually starting to criticize the DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
This is from Virginia? This is the state that passed USITA? Go ahead.
It's just kind of the theme this week that surprises are never ending.
This should be interesting. Go ahead.
You should always be paying attention to what's going on around you because you never know where it's going to be coming from. Here's what he said. And this was a speech given in front of the Consumer Electronics Association. They were having a conference, and he gave a keynote address entitled Digital Download, Public Access to Content in a Digital World. Actually, I think that's what the conference was called. But his speech had to deal with issues like that. The time, in my opinion, has come for the Congress to reaffirm the fair use doctrine. I wish we had an audio recording of this. I'd rather play that, but I don't. And to bolster specific fair use rights, which are now at risk. In 1998, responding to the concerns of copyright owners, Congress passed the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. The announced purpose was to protect from piracy copyrighted material in an environment which poses special concerns for copyright owners. They made the point that with digital technology, a copy of a copy of a copy has the same clarity and perfection as the original of the work. They also made the point that in the networked environment, with the single click of a mouse, thousands of those perfect copies can be sent to people throughout the nation and the world. The DMCA is the result of the effort by Congress to respond to those realities. There are some today who believe that the legislation went too far. Mm-hmm. For example, it creates, in Section 1201A, a new crime of circumventing a technological protection measure that guards access to a copyrighted work. Under Section 1201, the purpose of the circumvention is immaterial. It is a crime to circumvent the password or other gateway, even for the purpose of exercising fair use rights. There is no requirement that the circumvention be for the purpose of infringing the copyrights. Any act of circumvention without the consent of the copyright owner is made criminal under Section 1201. Some now foresee a time when virtually all new material will be sent to libraries on CD-ROMs, with the material encrypted or guarded by passwords. In exchange for a fee for each viewing, the password may then be used, and so it is predicted that under Section 1201, what is available today on the library shelves for free will be available on a pay-per-use basis only. The student who wants even the most basic access to material to write his term paper will have to pay for each item that he uses. Several of us made an effort in 1998 to limit the new crime under Section 1201 to circumvention for the purpose of infringement, but in the momentum to enact the measure, essentially unamended, we were not able to have that change adopted. With the growing realization on the part of the education community and supporters of libraries of the threat to fair use rights under Section 1201, which 1201 poses, perhaps the time will soon come for a congressional reexamination of this provision.
I hope so.
Perhaps the only conduct that should be declared criminal is circumvention for the purpose of infringement. Perhaps a more limited amendment could be crafted to ensure the continued exercise of fair use rights of libraries and in scholastic settings, notwithstanding the provisions of Section 1201. And I think there are other challenges. I am concerned by the apparent attempt of some in the content community to seek to protect their copyright interest in material contained in television programs by insisting that the TV signal quality be degraded or by insisting on the use of set-top box technology, which prohibits all copying. The reasonable expectations of television viewers to be able to make copies of programs for time shifting and other historically accepted purposes must be honored and must be fulfilled. Now, he's kind of dancing around things here. He's not really attacking it full force, but I think you'll find that any congressman will be kind of hesitant to go that far, you know, in opposition to something that obviously is very popular in the halls of Congress. It was passed unanimously by voice vote.
Well, why are we electing these cowards who refuse to voice their opinions?
Maybe they're the only ones running. I don't know. It seems like we just wind up electing the same basic types of people that that vote for these kinds of things. But it's nice to see at least somebody start to talk against it. And I think it's very important that that people show support. In fact, one of our friends here, Chris, sent in a letter to this guy. And by the way, you can find his webpage, www.house.gov/Boucher, B-O-U-C-H-E-R. And he wrote back. In fact, he got a letter today. Dear Chris, thank you for your recent communication regarding my proposals to strengthen fair use rights. I appreciate your kind words. I am concerned by the erosion of fair use guarantees, particularly the provisions of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which create a new crime of circumventing a technological protection measure, even if the purpose of the circumvention is to exercise fair use rights. Other measures are also necessary to protect the rights of information consumers. I will be introducing a broad fair use bill in the near future, and your expression of support for it will be most welcome. Now, that's interesting. So he will be introducing a bill. We'll be watching this like a hawk, and hopefully this will go someplace, and we can see the beginning of an end to one of many nightmares that are surrounding us.
People in Virginia, remember this in November.
If he's up for re-election.
If he's up for re-election,
yeah.
Remember, yeah.
Otherwise, remember it now. You know, it's doesn't really...
By definition, if he's in the House of Representatives...
Hang on. I've got to turn your mic on. Go ahead.
By definition, if he's in the House of Representatives, he's up for re-election every 2 years.
Yeah, but is this the second year?
This is what, 2001? No, next year.
All right. That was my point.
We'll remember it next year.
Here's something of a somewhat dramatic nature. I got this in the mail today. I was advised to pass it on. And you know me, someone advised me to pass something on, I pass
it
on. You know, about the Make Money Fast thing that I showed you last week. How's it working out, by the way?
I don't know. I sent the dollar to the guy, but I'm still waiting for people to send me dollars.
I'm getting $40,000 a day in single dollar bills in my mailbox.
Really?
Yeah, it really works.
Well,
I'm
going to try the envelope stuffing thing next.
Anyway, this is basically titled Vote No on Bill 602P.
What is 602P?
I'm going to tell you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It doesn't exist.
All right. You people. You're out. First, he says we're not a 50,000-watt radio station. Then he says the bill doesn't exist. What's going on here?
I didn't say that.
Yes, the warnings were true. Federal Bill 602P, 5 cents per email. It figures no more free email. We knew this was coming. Bill 602P will permit the federal government to charge a 5 cent charge. Charge? A 5 cent charge? I guess that's what you do with charges. On every delivered email. Please read the following carefully if you intend to stay online and continue using email. The last few months have revealed an alarming trend in the government of the United States attempting to quietly push through legislation that will affect our use of the Internet. Under proposed legislation, the U.S. Postal Service will be attempting to bill email users out of alternative postage fees. Bill 602P will permit the federal government to charge a 5 cent surcharge on every email delivered by billing Internet service providers at source. The consumer would then be billed in turn by the ISP. Washington, D.C. lawyer Richard Stepp is working without pay to prevent this legislation from becoming law. The U.S. Postal Service is claiming lost revenue due to the proliferation of email. It's costing nearly $230 million in revenue per year. You may have noticed the recent ad campaign, There Is Nothing Like a Letter. Since the average person receives about 10 pieces of email per day in 1998, the cost of the typical individual will be an additional 50 cents a day, or over $180 per year, above and beyond the regular Internet cost. I get so much more mail than that. Whew. Note that this would be money paid directly to the U.S. Postal Service for a service they do not even provide. The whole point of the Internet is democracy and non-interference. You are already paying an exorbitant price for snail mail because of bureaucratic inefficiency. It currently takes up to 6 days for a letter to be delivered from coast to coast. If the U.S. Postal Service is allowed to tinker with email, it will mark the end of the free Internet in the United States. All right, well, Congressional Representative Tony Schnell, he's a Republican, has even suggested a $20 to $40 per month surcharge on all Internet service above and beyond the government's proposed email charges. Note that most of the major newspapers have ignored the story, the only exception being the Washingtonian, which called the idea of email surcharge a useful concept whose time has come. That's from the March 6, 1999 editorial. Do not sit by and watch your freedom erode away. Send this email to everyone on your list and tell all your friends and relatives to write their congressional representative and say no to Bill 602P. It will only take a few moments of your time and could very well be instrumental in killing a bill we do not want. I like to think that I've done a great service tonight by going on this alleged 50,000-watt radio station and talking about this and getting the word out. Now,
I also disagree with Bill 602P.
All right, I'm glad to hear you take that. For once, you're taking a stand against something, and I'm glad to hear you do that. Now, I have some additional information on this. Actually, I did some research. I basically just looked for the Congressman Tony Schnell. Instead of Congressman Tony Schnell's page, though, I got Congressman John Sununu's page, New Hampshire 1st District. what's going on there. Basically the same initials, you know. Actually, no, it's not. It's Tony Schnell. Johnson, sorry. Well, I don't know. Same initial of the last name anyway. A rumor concerning proposed federal legislation imposing a surcharge on email messages is being circulated on the Internet via email. The email message, supposedly originating from the Vienna, Virginia law firm of Berger, Stepp, and Gorman, claims that Congressman Tony Schnell has introduced Bill 602P to allow the federal government to impose a 5-cent surcharge on all email messages delivered over the Internet. Funds collected from this surcharge, according to the message, are to be paid to the U.S. Postal Service to make up for lost revenue resulting from the increasing popularity of email. This rumor is completely false. There is no movement afoot in Congress to tax email or the Internet, nor does the USPS have any such designs. In fact, the USPS has issued a letter to all members of Congress flatly denying the rumor. Furthermore, there is no member of Congress in either the House or Senate named Tony Schnell, nor are bills from either chamber named in this fashion. Even the law firm mentioned in the message is fictitious. Don't you just love the net?
Yeah.
How you can start something like this? I've been getting this letter now, I think, for years. You know, for maybe like 5 years, I'm getting, you know, they update it. They put in new years. They put in new names, new little factual bits of information. But it just won't die. It's like the Mrs. Fields cookie thing. It just will not die.
Well, the reason it survived is that you're one of the few people who actually did the research. 602.
I typed in a name in a search engine and looked at the first page. That's all the research I did.
That's all the research you did. It's simple enough. I mean, you go to thomas.lock.gov. And you try to look up 602P, mm-hmm. Not only will you not find 602P, but the thing will yell at you because 602P is a ridiculous number.
It is a ridiculous
number. It's either SR and a number or HR and a number, standing for Senate Resolution or House Resolution.
Uh-huh. Jim?
Better people than us have been caught by this. In the last Clinton-Lazio debate, somebody brought this up.
Better people than us? Who?
Yeah, I doubt Hillary Clinton's better than anyone here.
That's true.
Now, I didn't get all factional and pick somebody. I decided to make it, and I would like to point out
that I also mentioned in this one of the Republicans I admire most and the Democrat I hate the most. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe second most. So I was trying to be polite to people that I have no contact with, no axe to grind.
Trying to be non-committal here.
I wasn't looking for a pardon even.
You know?
I just said, you know. I assume that a senator or senatorial candidate is in some way maybe better spirited. I know they wouldn't have taken umbrage by saying people better than us, but anyway. Yeah, both of them fell for it and came out against the supposing it. They didn't even notice, as Isaac pointed out, the mislabeling.
Yes, well, we're going to take phone calls. 212-209-2900 is our phone number, and we're talking about this, among other things as well. You read the latest about Napster? it's dying a long and agonizing death, and it's, I don't know how many people it's going to drag down the drainpipe with it. Napster says it's doing its best to block copyright songs that once flowed freely over its service, and that it has held discussions with a Berkeley-based company that could help Napster limit the swapping of millions of songs. Gracenote, a privately held company that has been compiling an online database of song and album titles since 1995, could offer a comprehensive way for Napster to track music that major record labels want removed from the song sharing service. So, you know, instead of providing, you know, listing of directories where you can find songs, now Napster is turning into a tracker that's going to track you down if you trade something that they don't want you to trade. Yeah, okay. Earlier in the month, Gracenote President David Hyman would not say whether any deals were in the works with Napster or the recording industry. Spelling variants of artist names, for instance, M. Metallica or Italica May, for instance, have lessened the effectiveness of Napster's week-old screening technology. Nonetheless, Napster CEO Hank Barry said Monday the company is following the law as it tries to fend off a copyright infringement suit filed by the recording industry. He described the effectiveness of Napster's new screening technology as a work in progress. That's where Gracenote's technology could prove useful. Anyone who has loaded an audio CD into a computer and watched the track titles magically appear has used Gracenote's CDDB system, which automatically downloads the information to internet-connected PCs. You know, I've been using that. I've been using that a lot lately. It's really amazing. But I'll get to that in a second. The Recording Industry of America, on behalf of its members, submitted 135,000 file names to Napster Friday to have them blocked from the file-sharing service. But as soon as the screening technology started making a dent in online song trading, crafty Napster users began misspelling banned and song titles to circumvent the block.
Crafty Napster users?
Crafty Napster
users. Or were they just very poor spellers?
Well, I guess they kind of mix and match now. Okay. Other services popped up on the Internet with solutions to the screening barrier, including several online pig Latin translators that turned Britney Spears into Itney Bray Earspay. I don't know. They just don't seem to get it. You can't stop this. As long as it's possible to encode something into a computer, people are going to copy. Computer files are designed to be copied. It's not going to stop. The faster speeds you get, you know, the better sound quality you attain, people are going to do this. We have to figure out a way so that this works well with artists who want their music passed around and ways that the record companies can live with it as well, because it's a reality. You can cry about it all you want, but it's like telling people they have to pay every time they hear a song on a radio, you know, and then running around turning off all the radios you hear playing in public places, which I think the RIA tries to do anyway, but it's just not going to work.
Honestly, I think the record companies are really overlooking one hell of a business opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they're taking the absolute wrong attitude, and if they were to embrace it and be able to craft it a little bit, they could make a major amount of money with this and keep a lot of people very happy.
Well, I think the time has come for a record company somewhere to pop up that gets it.
The first one that's going to get it is going to be the one who gets the windfall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's they're going to start it all, and everyone else is going to be in their front.
Not just a windfall, but also just respect from the consumers, yeah, respect from the artists. You know, and I think that should be, if that's their number one concern, the rest will follow.
But you see, the respect is what brings the dollars.
But if you think that way, you're not going to get much respect. You know, people will see through that. You might lose a lot of money. You might go out of business. You have to be willing to take that risk.
Well, that's not a very good business opportunity.
Maybe not, but it's what altruism is, and that's what defines
leaders.
They're
looking to make money. They're not in it to help people.
Okay,
let me rephrase.
What we need is somebody who is not just in it to make money, somebody who's in it to make things better. All right?
What?
And maybe if that person succeeds, they'll make money. Maybe they won't. But the important thing is their belief in making things better has to be sincere.
Okay.
That's what we need.
Well, why can't one do both, make money and make things
it's
better?
It's quite possible, but you can't go...
Historically, they've gone hand in hand.
Yeah.
Why is there some
you can't go. You can't go into it with the money issue being predominant on your mind, because that will take over everything else.
Why not?
Because it's historically proven to be the way things work.
Why? That's how...
Look, if your major concern is to make money, that is what you're going to try and do, is make money. And you're going to compromise on other issues. You're going to compromise on quality, you're going to compromise on integrity.
You can't compromise on quality and integrity and have a good product to make money. If you manage to build a better mousetrap...
If you have a monopoly, you can. If you're the first one, you can. Sure, it's possible.
If you manage to build a better mousetrap,
mm-hmm.
people will buy it because it is better, and you will get the money.
Yeah, but you see, a mousetrap is rather a simple device. We're talking about the future of recorded sound on the Internet and record
companies.
Let me
use a cliche. You can't let me use a cliche.
Go ahead, use a cliche, but we're running out of time. I want to
take some phone calls.
Let me just quickly say, though, I mentioned CDDD before, which
yes.
I find to be pretty interesting. It's a database of virtually all the CDs out there. What I've been doing, I mentioned the Cube that I have. Now I have an iMac as well.
Is it still upset with you, by the way?
No. Actually, I was able to get the CD out, and I rebooted it a few times, and the error just went away.
Both come to an understanding. That's good.
For now. But anyway, the point is, I've been taking my entire CD collection and encoding it to MP3 using a program known as iTunes, which comes standard with all Cubes now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what this program does, it accesses CDDB, grabs the information, which most of the time is right. Sometimes it's wrong, and you have to correct it. But when it's right, it's really cool, because it grabs the information, records all the individual songs as individual MP3s, stores them in a directory under the album title, which is stored under a directory under the artist name. So what you wind up having, if you have a decent-sized hard drive of, say, 25, 50 gigs, you can take a fairly large amount of CDs. I have several hundred CDs. This is taking a long time.
Yeah.
But when you're finished, you have on your computer a directory of all the music that you own. and you can access it. And you can say, you know, today I just want to hear songs that begin with the letter D. And you can do that.
That's right there.
Or you can just play songs that are a minute, 3 seconds. You know, you can categorize it any way you want. It happens quickly. It's instantaneous access. What I had before, I thought this was really cool when I bought it. I bought a 400 CD changer. 400 CDs. Imagine that.
Big round carousel thing, yeah.
It was incredible. It was really, it moved around in circles, access thing. But, you know, I couldn't find anything. How do you find a CD when it's with 400 others? You know, it didn't use CD-DV to tell you what CD was where. You know, they were all in there. You had to remember that it was like CD number 352 was
track
something.
Number five, yeah.
And God forbid I needed a CD fast. You know, I'd have to either play each CD one after the other and find the music that way, or actually rifle through them by hand and find it that way. It was awful. So, yeah, physical access to the CD was not an advantage in this case. But that said, I still, in the future, when I add to my library of MP3s, which I'll now be listening to all the time, I want the original CD. Because let's say I hear something I really like on my MP3 player, and I want to play something on the radio. I want to just grab that CD and bring it in with me.
Go.
Let's say I want to hear it in some other place, like my car, if I had a CD player in my car. Or, you know, another part of the house. Mm-hmm. You know, having the CD. And also, another very important thing, when you just copy MP3s from people, you don't really know for sure that it's right, the information they give you. You know, they could say something is one band and it's actually another.
Oh, I've encountered that on many occasions.
Yeah, so if you really are into the music, you'll want the original. You want something with liner notes and something that's actually there in your hands. So this has actually made me want to go out and buy more music.
You see, if you embrace this technology, mm-hmm. record companies, this is someone who wants to go out and buy more music by these artists that he's hearing.
I have no intention of buying more music because of the inflated prices of CDs.
Well,
but
that's the same.
If they were to come down a little bit, I would.
You're asking for a lot there, but that's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Did you see the Apple commercial?
The Apple commercial.
There is an Apple commercial where the fellow walks into a music hall, mm-hmm. and on stage are a bunch of artists, you know, Smash Mouth, and you got the George Clinton and Barry mm-hmm. White, and they're all up there, and he's mixing his own CD. You know, like track one's going to be this guy, and track two,
right?
And you got all the artists saying at the very end. Apple puts up its three words, and on the bottom it says copyright 2001, Apple Computer Incorporated. Mm-hmm. But if you look real carefully, at the very end it says, don't steal music.
Well, again, there's a lot of interpretations to what stealing music really is. You know, is it listening to the radio? Is that stealing music? You know, there's all kinds of ways of interpreting it. A couple of things, though, that I thought of while I was doing all this encoding. Number one, when you ever go to a diner, you know, those places that serve food?
I always
yeah.
go.
Okay,
I
well,
diners.
You notice they all have the same kind of jukebox, you know, the one that sits at the table, and they all have the little 45s sure. and songs from the 1960s.
Well, the CDs now. But.
Now, I have a computer that I can carry around with me right now that has more than 12 days worth of music on it just now, and I'm not even finished yet. It's probably going to be well over 20 days by the time I'm finished, if not more. Why cannot somebody make a machine that can be sold to diners and places like that, where you basically have the choice of tens of thousands of songs? And I'm convinced the only reason why this hasn't happened is greed, is because they want, you know, the maximum return for every single song you play. You can have an MP3 in a jukebox, and nobody's going to know the difference if it's a 45 or an MP3.
Honestly,
so it's not that.
I don't think it's greed. I think no one's thought of it before.
Well, I just thought of it. Right after the show, I'm going down to the copyright office. I'm going to copyright the idea, too, so nobody can steal it.
That's a heck of an idea.
Yeah. In fact, why don't you go now in case somebody's already doing that?
You want me to file a patent for that?
Can you do that, please?
Right now?
You have the forms.
Yeah, but, you know, we've got 20 minutes left here.
Yeah, okay. So we'll be done by 9. Okay. And the other thing, which maybe somebody can help me with, the one problem I've come up with when I'm playing an album with an MP3,
mm-hmm.
for some reason, there's a gap between every MP3. It's like a little artificial gap that they put in. So if you're listening to Dark Side of the Moon or something where everything has to flow just right, you get all these like choppy things in between. So if anybody knows a way where you can play MP3s seamlessly, that'd be really cool to know.
Well, I think you have to butt the files right up next to each other.
Yeah, well,
it's probably just the player trying to load the next file. It takes a little while.
It really doesn't, though.
Huh?
It really doesn't. It's instant loading, because I tested that, and there's no delay when you load the first one. So it seems to be something that they just put in artificially. I don't know why. I guess
maybe.
Probably because if you put songs that didn't go together right next to each other, it would sound awful.
That would make sense.
If you're playing like Beethoven's Ninth, and then you're, you know, playing something by Tchaikovsky, you don't want to do a segue, you know. It doesn't work. Okay, take some phone calls, 212-209-2900. First time we've really had a chance to... Well, actually, you took calls last week.
I took calls last week.
Yeah. All right, let's see who's out there. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yes, how are you guys doing?
Pretty good, how are you?
I'm good. I was watching CNN FN, and I saw the profile of this company called TTI Technologies, and it came out with something called Safe Audio. And it works in a way that they manufacture the CD in which way that the songs cannot be ripped from it. What happens if you try to rip it and try to play it back, you'll hear some kind of noise. I don't know if you guys heard of that.
I've heard of similar type of wishful thinking on the part of various record companies, but... you know, it's like another version of Macrovision or something.
It's doomed to failure. This is basic information theory, guys. If you can listen to it, you manage to get the unencrypted stream or the unencumbered stream in any way, so you can listen to it, you can make a copy of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, as soon as you have that bit stream, at any point in the sequence, you can make a copy of it. I don't see how these people are continuing to try and make these bizarre schemes and sell them.
Like I say, it's all greed. It's all about, you know, maximizing their profit. What they don't realize, they're very short-sighted. They don't realize the bigger picture. It's good to spread music around. It's good to share listening experiences. It results in more people being interested in, if you want to think of an artist as a product, the product that you're peddling.
I'm not seeing why you continue to bash the money aspect of this.
Because the money aspect is why we're in this situation to start with. If this was truly about art, about musicians and artists that want to get their word out, we'd have a very rich society. We'd be listening to all kinds of different things and sharing all kinds of different things. We'd be beyond all this. Instead, we're just mired in these courtroom dramas where, you know, we're talking about the record companies. For God's sake, they made more money last year than ever before. And their response to that is, well, we would have made even more if it wasn't for Napster and all these other people copying and stealing music.
My response to that is, if you hold these artists in such high regard, why are you... and, you know, helping them as they sign these contracts to the record companies? If they're in it for the art and not for the money themselves, why are they signing these contracts, getting the limos, getting the stage tours, and like?
I think you're answering your own question. They're being bribed with riches, with limousines,
so
with caviar, and things like that.
You're telling me they're
don't
not
tell
in
me
for the
you
art
wouldn't
either.
Do the exact same thing. If someone walked in here right now with a limousine or one downstairs and offered you a contract to do something, you would do it.
I don't know. Maybe I would. Maybe I wouldn't.
You would.
But you seem to be faulting the companies for trying to make a buck, but these artists who are selling their work is acceptable?
No, I mean, you know, I feel for them, but I think they're making a big mistake by signing on with record companies that do this kind of thing. I mean, think what you just said, selling their work. Selling, how can you sell your work? It's your work, for God's sake. It's something you created. But think about it. You know, John Lennon, you know, the song Come Together. I hear Come Together now. What do I think of? I think of Nortel Networks. What the hell is that? Every time I hear the familiar beginning of Come Together, I think of a phone company. That is what they have done. That's how they corrupt art.
Well, be careful.
And Yoko can't do a damn thing about it because she's got no control over it. Well, it's all owned by a company.
Be careful. In your, you know, utopian society there where you just give this stuff away for free, anyone can pick it up, which means any company can pick anything up, too.
Well, I mean... I think most people understand the concept of the artist having control over their work.
Okay.
And someone not taking credit for something they did not do.
Does Nortel ever consider the fact that, yeah, we wrote this song that Lennon wrote? They're not doing that. They're not going
to. I don't think it matters to them. Why would it? You know, people hear those chords. Every time you listen to the Beatles now, you go out and buy a phone system. it's a nightmare. All right, let's take another call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening.
A friend of mine
gave me a Windows NT desktop. But he didn't take off the operating system. I was wondering how I can go about taking off the Windows NT image.
Do you have explosives? No?
No.
All right. Well, there's. You have a way, Isaac?
I'm misunderstanding.
What do you want to put on the machine instead?
I wanted to put Windows 98 on it.
So you want to go from NT to Windows 98?
Oh, you just want to install Windows 98?
Yep.
You want to just basically format the drive and go about the installation procedures for Windows 98.
Is there anything on the drive you want to save?
No, I want to completely format the drive.
Oh, that's easy.
Wipe it?
Yeah, that should be no problem at all.
Use the Windows 98 boot disk. You basically just want to type format C colon.
Yeah.
And go through it.
If you have any problems, call the people tomorrow night, Personal Computer Show.
This hour.
On every Wednesday night from 8 to 9. Another good bunch of folks here at the station.
Very good people.
That I like to listen to. All right, let's go to another phone call. Let's go over here. Good evening. You're on the air. Interesting.
Mr.
Dowell's
back, I see. Yeah.
Good evening. You're on the air. All right. You know, I am so sick of hearing that. I am so sick of hearing that.
But what does it mean?
I know what it means.
What does it mean?
It means somebody should have taken an English course and they were translating a Japanese video game many years ago. All your base I belong to us. Okay.
Evidently a chemistry student that's been up way too long.
Yeah. I don't think so. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
That's Alex Zanchev calling from Scotland. Is that you, Manuel? I'm just listening with quite a bit of delay on the radio because I'm listening over MP3. First of all, your question about the songs that are going on with the gap in between them. You can listen to them with no problem if you have Winamplify the latest version.
Oh, really? Winamp, the latest version, doesn't have a problem with that?
Yeah. They can make them just evolve one after another.
Okay, great.
And the other thing you were talking about, the songs, how expensive the CDs are in the States. Well, actually, here in Britain, they're like 1.6 times more expensive. First, because of the conversion of the currencies, and second, that they just sell them on like £16, and that's the flat rate. And as far as I know, in the States, it's like $14.
Mm-hmm.
And since I'm Bulgarian, I know the biggest band in Bulgarian, rock band, which are going on for like 30 years now. I was listening to them going on about MP3 and one of the sites in Bulgaria, which are writing in Bulgarian, so none of the American agencies can check them and say, you know, we can ban you like they're banning Napster at the moment.
Uh-huh.
The guy was talking to these people from that.
Hello?
Right. And they were asking them, what do you think about it? Are you not afraid that they're copying this copyright stuff of yours and you're losing money? He said, well, I've made plenty of money from my songs because people, when they hear the music, they either like it or don't, and if they like it, they go and buy the whole CD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or because they want to see the artwork for it and so on, and they come to our concerts and so on. So we take the money from the kids and...
Well, you know, that's the other thing. That's the other thing. If you're hearing music from Bulgaria, you're not likely to find that anywhere around here. You're not likely to hear it on the radio. You'll find it on the net. You'll be interested in it. You'll want to buy CDs or go to concerts, and you'll just expand so much more than you would have ordinarily. So it's a way of reaching so many more people.
As a matter of fact, I was listening the other day to WBAI again, another show, and they were presenting this artist. I think it was some sort of African guy. Presenting sort of African music, which I quite liked,
mm-hmm.
and I've never found anything about him on any commercial stations or anything like that. But he gave his address on the radio station. I've wrote it down, and I'm now about to send him a check actually to get a copy of his CD.
That's great.
That's the way he'll send me a CD, mm-hmm. and I'll actually pay him directly. And that's how he presented himself over the internet and over your radio.
Uh-huh. That's
and
really
that's
amazing.
He's getting his money with no companies to stay over his head and just... Because I'm sure for all this money that are going out of the album, these £16, probably £14 of them are going to the record company, not to the actual artist.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
This guy is going to be able to keep all the profits from his work.
Mm-hmm.
And he deserves them.
Yeah.
Practically, yeah.
So now you listen to WBAI in Scotland.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, so I've actually called it before. I called it last year.
Uh-huh. Yes, I remember.
Oh, trust
remember.
Me. I remember a Bulgarian in Scotland. That's
talking over mobile phone. That's why I'm going. I don't know whether you can hear it on the other side, but it's saying to me 5 minutes remaining, 4 minutes remaining.
Oh, you have one of those card things, yeah.
Yeah, it's prepaid phone.
Ah. Well, I want to thank you for calling us and keep listening to the station.
Very much.
All right.
Keep on going and good luck with all your fights. Trying, I'll probably find a way to support the station even from here. As far as I know, I can send you checks and so on. So I'll think of something like that, and I'm sure that other people from Europe will support you as well.
Okay.
Because tonight I was listening to the show before yours, and that really made me a really good impression for all the things they were saying, for the things that are covered up in the States. I'm coming from a country like Bulgaria, you know, that was a communist country 10 years ago, and we had censorship there. And I can see things happening in the States which are not even happening in the communist society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's troubling, it's frightening, and it's something that as long as we have a radio station, we should be talking about. Thanks, thanks for calling, thanks for listening, and please spread the word about WBAI, whatever country you're in. I'm sure there are people in all different countries listening to us right now, and that's really cool. It's really, that's what the net has done. It's gotten us out there to so many other people. On a normal show, we have about 200 people listening throughout the world over the net, which I find to be absolutely staggering, and I hope that continues. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up, please.
Hello. Oh, yes. Wow, I finally got on.
Yes.
My phone is about to die. I just had a quick question.
Yes.
I'm a musician, a professional musician,
mm-hmm.
classical music. Is there any technology, or do you ever foresee a technology where you could feed digital information from a CD into a program and have it print
score?
Out music?
You mean actually compose a score based on the tones that you went into the computer?
Yeah. Is that something that you think could ever be possible?
Possible, yes. Readily available. I don't think you'd find something like that on a shelf at CompUSA, quite honestly.
Right.
I'm sure there are musicians out there that are working on something just like that, though. So we'll probably get email about this. And if anybody out there has information, oth@2600.com, we'll mm-hmm. talk about it next week.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I love your show. I listen to it as much as I can. And I'm a BAI member and supporter, and I hope you guys keep rocking and rolling.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for calling. Let's see if we can take a couple more phone calls. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Manuel.
How you doing?
I have sad news for phone freaks everywhere.
Wait, let me think of what this could possibly be. Let's see. Redbox is no longer work. No, that's old news. The last payphone's taken out of the Mojave Desert. What could it be? Well, Mir's crashing down. It doesn't really affect phone freaks, though.
No.
Ham radio enthusiasts, yes.
All right, what is it?
Radio Shack is discontinuing its memory pocket tone dial.
Oh, yeah. That's old news, too.
And they're slowly eliminating their parts department altogether.
That's kind of good news, I think.
That's good news?
Well, no, I'm sorry. I'm just being nasty.
They're maintaining their catalog, though, right? You can still order stuff from
them? I believe so.
Not that you'd want to. Go to, like, DigiKey or
why are they doing this?
Because it doesn't make money.
Uh-huh. You see, Isaac? You see?
Yeah,
it doesn't make money, so you stop doing it.
Well, the point is, Radio Shack was never really good at it in the first place.
Yeah, but
so you go to people who are good at it, you bring your dollars
back. The good news is...
Uh-huh. Go ahead, what's the good news?
Pocket tone dialers, they're clearing them out, and they're about $5 a pop right now.
Yeah, and I hear people jumping in dumpsters, too, looking for ones that they're throwing out as well.
Yeah.
Why?
You see, they don't even work anymore as red boxes.
You can do other experiments.
No, forget the red box.
Yeah, you can do other things with them.
If you can't remember 30 phone numbers, I mean, there's something very wrong with you.
Well,
plus most cell phones have that anyway.
Of red boxing in New York with the AT&T long distance operator,
mm-hmm.
it still works.
You're kidding.
Nope.
Wow, that's...
At least in Brooklyn.
That's pretty surprising.
Oh, and Emmanuel?
Yes.
All your bases belong to us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. What a nice note to end on. But we're going to have to do just that as we are out of time. I don't know. We live in volatile times, you know? Don't know what's going to happen next and what new technological development is going to open up all kinds of other questions and court cases and things like that. We'll have updates week after week as things progress. Our appeal is moving towards court in April, I believe, next month, for the DECSS case. We'll have more updates on that, as well as all the other things that are taking place. So until next week, it's Emmanuel Goldstein for Isaac and all the others. Have yourselves a good night.
Atlantica Radio Empire presents a tribute to radio rival, radio rebel, Lou Hill.
Radio can and should be used for significant communication and art.
Wow, what a wacky Quaker eccentric was Lou Hill of Pacifica.
Art and the communication of ideas are risky affairs.
Boing.
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 It can never be predicted just when the purely individual and abnormal may assert itself.
Boing.
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 Boing. Boing.
Boing.
Boing.
Boing.
To get any real art or any significant communication,
one must rely entirely on individuals.
And must resign himself to accept not only their uniqueness,
but the possibility that the individual may at any time fail.
The basic situation of broadcasting must be such that artists and thinkers have a place to work with freedom.
He was weird.
He was wacky.
He was Lou Hill of Pacifica.
And now he's gone.
Thank you, Atlantica.